Welcome to Blightbringers, a Legion of Everblight podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tyrone, and I was just recently at the Sioux. You know who else was at the Sioux? The other hosts, Cutter and Ryan. Welcome back to the show, Cutter.
Ahoy! Yes, I too was at the Sioux, and I had a great time. I haven't been there in, I think, maybe 3 years. It's been a couple years at least. I don't think I've gone since I've been in New York. So it was really cool because I used to live up there. So it was kind of around the corner from me in Rochester. And it was great seeing all of the people I used to see at events all the time.
Yeah, that's awesome. The Sioux is a great place to meet up with the community for sure. Also here is Ryan. Welcome back. How was the Sioux for you, Ryan?
It was suitably wonderful. Cool. Secret Hitler is a lot of fun. Hanging out with all the guys from the Philly area that I've only heard of and never actually really talked to nor, you know, had a conversation with was kind of neat, and got to play some really good games. So I thoroughly enjoy that convention. It is, if not the best one on the East Coast, easily top three.
That's awesome, yeah. I totally agree. The Sioux is great. And finally, special guest this week is Nate. Welcome back, Nate.
Thank you. I had a great Sioux as well. Played lots of War Machine and lots of Captain Sonar. And yeah, it's good to meet you, Tyrone,
yes,
as we had never met before.
Yeah, that was super cool. I remember you guys playing Captain Sonar. It's quite a loud game.
It is an intensely fun game. If you get the chance to play it, definitely do so.
Yeah, I'm going to have to make some time for that next convention that I attend with the War Machine guys because it sounded like a blast. So I have to imagine it was very fun.
It's like four mini games duct taped together, and then also you get to just yell a lot, which is the basis for any fun time, I think.
Yeah, that it seems like a real life version of like FTL or what was that phone game, like Space Alert or something.
Oh, it's sort of like Space Team meets Battleship. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we'll talk a bit more about board games later, I'm sure, but for the time being, why don't we get into what tournaments we entered and what we played. I personally joined the Champions event. I had intended to play Masters, but I never really, day of, I wasn't really feeling it, so I skipped it and just kind of wandered around and played a lot of Watch Machine, which worked for me. I had a good time doing that. But Champions was an interesting little thing for me. I ended up playing Lilith 1 and Kallus 1. He was on my tray, but I had no intention of playing him because I hadn't actually put him on the table yet, so I really had no idea what to do. Other than the vague notion of run dudes at enemy feet, win on scenario, which didn't seem particularly interesting. So instead, I just played Lilith with Raptors. It was the Children of Dragon list, which I've posted before. The first game was against Krix. Pretty uneventful. Top of two. He was way too close, and I feeded and killed him. It was pretty silly. Between Zuriel and Azrael, he just kind of died. The second game was against a Grimkin player who I believe, Cutter, you're familiar with. I forget his name. Dang.
A Grimkin player I'm familiar with.
Yeah, you might have faced him in Masters.
Was it Paul?
Do you know his last name?
Jaeger?
Yeah, it was Paul Jaeger.
Yeah, he's from my old meta.
Yeah, super awesome dude. Played a really fantastic game. It was my first time playing into Bump, actually. He played Bump into me with a Clock, one Skin of Moans, two units of Naysayers, two units of the dudes that like make suicide dudes. I forget what they're called.
Madcaps.
Yeah, Madcaps. Yep. Holy crap, they're annoying.
The best.
They're so annoying. He had a couple support solos that I had no idea what they did, so they definitely he took advantage of that. That's for sure.
Yep.
But essentially the game boiled down to the Naysayers are very irritating when they have Feign Death and just knock themselves over when you're playing a ranged list. It sucks.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't shoot them to death with Raptors, so I ended up spending most of my time trying to kill the stupid Madcaps. And I killed one, and he's like, "Okay, I'm gonna like shoot a dude at you." And I was like, "Oh right, that happens, doesn't it?" was like not impressed.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a fairly reasonable game, except for the point where I thought I was up one more point than I was on scenario. And I ended up throwing it away really badly, because if I had succeeded, I only would have been 4-0, and I didn't succeed, so I was only 3-0, and then I got assassinated, and I was like, well, that was unfortunate. Yeah. Didn't.
What got to you?
Did I get assassinated or did I just concede? I may be wrong. Oh, what happened?
There is a lot of stuff in that list that can get to you.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I was playing Lilith. No. Oh, I think I just got shot to death.
Maybe. There is a Clockatrice.
No, the Clockatrice was dead.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. I know I got killed. Yeah, I'm pretty
sure. Longfellow.
Oh, Longfellow is such a jerk off. You see, like, he walked up and just blasted Azrael in the face, and I was like, oh, okay. Take a million. Got it.
Uh-huh.
It might actually have been Longfellow. That guy.
Longfellow goes from 0 to 15 real quick.
Yeah, he's very good against the Children of the Dragon list, I'll tell you what.
Yep. He never is like a 6. He's always either a 0 or like a 13 to 15.
Mm-hmm. Yep, every time.
Yeah, completely reasonable. Third game, I got paired up against Danny McGee, and at this point, I was like kind of burnt out from my Wanderer match, and I really didn't want to face Iona. So I ended up just because I wanted to see, one of my plans was actually to see like how good the list would perform into Iona and if it could deal with Tharn. The answer is it doesn't, but you do kill a lot of Tharn on feat turn. That's what I've learned. It's not that bad. Keeping Lilith alive is tricky because Lord of the Feast is still very good. But yeah, that ended pretty quick, like bottom of two, kind of quick, and that was fine. I had no problem with that. Played some random games throughout the rest of the weekend. Didn't really play many board games, but I did get to play against Ryan, which we had a really good game. We had a really good game, I think. It was obviously the mirror. Again, I played Lilith 1, you had Abby 1, is that right?
Yep, you had me dead to rights, and you made, I think, like I said, one, maybe two mistakes, and let me claw back a win because of it.
Yeah, it was pretty unfortunate for me, because I kind of like tunnel visioned pretty hard on an assassination that really wasn't there. And then I threw away Anissa, and I think you mentioned I should be using Pursuit at some point.
So you had killed the angel turn one.
I sure did.
Moved it up too far.
Well, it didn't get to refuge.
Yeah, I moved it up, tried to get a refuge shot off. It didn't work.
Yeah.
You then killed that, almost killed Proteus. Feet kept him alive.
Yeah, if I had killed Proteus, you would have been in big trouble.
Yep. I threw the Seraph away trying to kill Zuriel,
mm-hmm.
because Wild Aggression Seraph still did like 25 boxes to him.
Yeah, you almost had him. I was kind of
shocked. Yeah, leaves him at like 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was almost dead. But then, like, the minute you killed Proteus, I think it was like turn 3 or 4, all I had left was Carnivian, maybe 2, and you still had Zuriel alive because he was standing next to the objective just healing every turn.
Yeah, you had 2 Carnies.
Yeah. If you throw Pursuit out instead of Parasite, just one turn, neither one of those Carnies can ever get to Zuriel, and Lilith was far enough back with a Bolt Thrower that I couldn't get to her. You got to play the game then of, well, you can contest scenario, but you only have 2 beasts to do it, and then I'm going to kill them. Or you can try and hold yours, and I outmodel you, and I can just contest you every turn.
Yeah.
Like, you had me dead to rights, and because you went, no, I need to put Parasite out and kill this thing, you gave me an opening to get back in the game and clawed back a win.
Yeah, I definitely need to switch to dealing with your support instead of, like, fighting your beasts. And yeah, I think Pursuit and then shooting, like, some ice switches off the table would have been way better.
Yep. You would have won on either scenario or possibly assassination once I had to move Abby up. Because it turns out Lilith will still just randomly kill her.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lilith is, well, being Isle of Sight ignores Ashen Veil, so there's no point in you putting it up. And, like, she still has Parasite, so the first hit doesn't hurt that much. The second hit hurts like a truck.
Yep, and then you've still got the next 2 turns, plus Ice Witch Sprays.
Yes.
Plus anything else you can throw, like, GG.
No, yeah, I had a super fun game with you. Cutter, what were you saying?
I was just going to say some of those upkeeps can be like backbreaking if you don't have a way to remove them.
Yeah, absolutely. Pursuit I've used once, and the one game I had it up, it felt amazing because I got it on a 10-man unit because they like toughed. So I was like, all right, well, I'll just put Pursuit on them. And then like Azrael just like ran around the board doing whatever he wanted. It was amazing. But yeah, that was pretty much my weekend. Except, well, I went to go play Magic at a nearby shop, but that's not interesting to you guys, I'm sure. But I had a good time with that. And it was fucking fantastic to meet everybody and like chalk and just kind of like catch up, hand out the shirts that had to be handed out. So Nate, you got one of those. I sent a couple back to UK with, what the heck's his name?
Jake, Ben, or Mark, right?
Yeah, Mark Wittenstall, yeah. Yep. Super nice dude. He's a lovely, lovely person. So it was nice to kind of chat with him as well. I went over and he had finished a game against, I want to say Menoth. And just listening to him talk about like what his Menoth player could have done better. Like, I was like, man, this guy like is totally dialed in and he's totally willing to just like improve everybody. So like shout out to him, man. He seems like a great dude for the UK meta. Moving on from me and my ramblings, why don't we talk about Ryan? How did your Masters run go?
It could have went better by a pretty significant margin. So I ended up going 1-2 in Masters and then dropped because I'm a bad player who drops after 3 rounds. Fight me.
Okay, I did it in Champions. Like, I'm not going to judge.
This is the American meta, not Europe. I can do that. Fuck off. Let's see. I brought Saren, Double Thrones. I modified my Abbey 1 list from Carnies to Scythians to be able to deal with Menoth a little bit better. Turns out Harby doesn't like having 3 heavies with Grievous. And the 1-inch longer threat helps get onto bigger things a little bit easier. Not to mention Murderous is just really good into Faithful Masses when it's, hey, here's like 9 important solos that you can't kill. And then you go, yeah, but can't I? So that was great. And then just the standard Animag list. Fun note, I brought a Bogtrog Trawler with me, which if you don't know what that is, it's a 3-point little minion solo. It ambushes, and it has a drag gun for small and medium bases that it hits. That little son of a bitch did some work. Like, he pulled a Ravenger UA out of command and left like 4 Ravengers that just couldn't do anything the next turn because the UA got pulled 8 inches back, which is just amazing. I got a Bane Warrior UA and did basically the same thing. And there was something, I don't remember the third one. I know I pulled it off 3 times and went, this is a stupid little 3-point ambushing solo. Why does this keep happening? You know what? Don't care. Roll on with it. So that's hilarious if you feel like janking your local meta a little bit. Can't promise you it's going to work, but oh god, when it works, do you just feel like a genius. Yeah, round 1 I played into Dustin, I don't actually know his last name, Canadian guy, super nice.
McWhorter, yeah.
Yeah, super nice guy. I've seen him a couple times, it was the first game I had into him. And I dropped Saren, and he was one of the 2 Signar players there, and he put down Siege 1.
Mm-hmm. Whoops.
Great. Yeah.
Womp.
So I think I won the roll off, picked sides just to try and block him off a little bit better. He moved forward. I ran at him and feated. He did like no damage. I charged things and did like no damage. And then Siege feated, removed 2 thrones, Zuriel, left a Bloodseer on like 4 boxes, and a Scythian on like 10, and went, oh, all right, I'm just going to score 1. Your turn. I'm like, man, fuck this game. What the hell? So,
woof.
Yeah, went for a bullshit assassination that didn't really work and lost round 1.
That's painful.
So, yeah, that was sad. Round 2 was into a circle player playing Iona on Mirage, and I dropped Animag, and he obviously drops Iona. Found out after the game, well, I found out almost immediately that he was newer. I found out exactly how new after the game. Apparently, he'd only been playing since, like, November. So I spent, like, 2 turns not using spells or feeding. And I tabled him to Iona, and then he conceded because I think all he'd managed to kill is maybe one Chosen and two Warmongers. So
yeah, that's pretty one-sided. Holy shit.
Yeah, that was fun. And then round three, I ended up against Rhett. Dropped Saren again because this is one of the things that I had teched her for. Ran Thrones up, and it turns out that five of those stupid Rissavas defenders, little Powten Weapon Master dudes, with no help and no buffs and nothing else, five of them will kill two Thrones on about 20-ish boxes apiece by charging them. Yeah. I didn't do the math on it, but I'm pretty sure when you're dice off 10, that shouldn't be happening.
That's closer than you might think.
It probably is, but that shouldn't be that.
Yeah, the weapon master charge averages 14. So if he's putting five of them into you, he needs to swing like maybe only one standard deviation above the mean in order to kill the Thrones.
He killed both of them, though, man. He charged with two into one and killed 20 and 20 boxes off, and three into the other and took 20, like three or 24 boxes off.
Okay, my apologies. I thought you meant he charged five into each.
No, he had five left total, and they killed two battle engines. And then I think terrific. I'm pretty sure it was a Hydra charged Zuriel and just man-moded him with like four attacks. No strength buff, no nothing else. He just went in and was like, nope, fuck this guy, and killed him. And at that point, I went, cool, I don't care anymore. Like, I'm done. This is just ridiculous, and I cannot deal with it. So that was basically the end of my Masters run. Then I played in some Scramblers. I got two games of Twilight Imperium in, which, if anybody's never played it, it is a fun-as-hell game. It takes goddamn forever, though.
I told you. I told you before you started.
I know you did.
And then I told you the next day before you started the second game.
Oh, shut up. It's a super fun game. It just, like, if you know what you're doing, it's going to take 8 or 9 hours. I had never played it before, so the first game, I think, took 10.5. And then I agreed to play it again.
I don't know why you did that.
I don't know why I did it either, honestly. It seemed like a good idea at the time. I had been drinking at that point. My decision-making was not great.
Fair. I shouldn't have brought you two bottles of Sortilege, I guess.
I'm really appreciative that you did, because one of them came home with me, and one of them got shared with, like, Seth and Baby Michael and basically everyone else that was playing Secret Hitler. Like, it was a great time. There's nothing wrong with downing an entire bottle of Sortilege with, like, four or five other people.
Yeah, as long as you do it as a team.
I mean, team event, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I'll see if I can find a bottle and bring it down to Bokur, assuming I go, Seth, if you're listening to this, me and you, we're just going to kill that entire bottle ourselves. Let's fucking do this.
Oh,
Seth,
man.
Is an A-plus human being. One of my favorites.
Oh, God, I had so much fun talking to him the entire weekend. Like, we'd never had a full conversation. And it was just like, random times he'd just come up behind me and be like, what's up, buddy? And I'm like, oh, God, you're sneaky for a big dude. Where did you come from?
Oh, man. Well, before we move on to Cutter, I want to shout out a couple people that I ran into and had good chats with. So JBM, as always, he's a super nice dude. He'll talk to you about anything, particularly about Legion. And when Zosha's around, it's the best.
Yeah, I still never met him in person. Like, the one time I was going to talk to him, I think I was talking to you at the time. Like, he was on top of Zosha on the floor, and there was, like, two dogs near them.
That did happen.
Like, I'm like, I'm not interrupting this. I don't know what's going on, but I'm not going to be the one that ruins it.
No, that's smart. So yeah, I chatted with Jake a little bit. I chatted with Simon Withers, a longtime listener of the show. He's regularly commenting on our posts and on Legion Facebook, so shout outs to him. Trying to think, there was a couple other Legion players. I'm sorry, I forget your names, but for everybody who said hi to myself, for Cutter, Ryan, like, we thank you. Like, it's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So, Cutter, tell us about your Masters and whatever else you did at the Zoo.
Yeah, I'm going to try and cram as much as I can in 10 to 15 minutes.
Nah, just go for it.
So I hitched a ride with Nate, which was awesome because we talked about Legion the whole way there. Maybe not the whole way, but we talked a lot of Legion, and it was like, how long did that take us? It was
probably like an easy eight or nine hours with like the breaks and stuff.
Yeah,
y'all are out of your mind.
That's a long ass drive.
Yeah, it was a trip. So we talked lots of Legion. I went into kind of the how I put my triad together, and we talked a little bit about lists, which I'll let you talk about it. I think we may have like shuffled things around a little bit there. It was fun. But basically I going into the weekend, I had two triads that I felt really good about. I did this exhaustive analysis, rating all of the lists that I thought I could play, 1 to 3, 1 being good, 3 being bad, and 2 being like a skill matchup, and then rated every single caster and every theme that I thought I might see them in across the whole game. It was about 120 casters and about a dozen lists of mine, and then tried to build triads out of that. And I had 2 that came out within 0.02 of each other. So that's on a 1 to 3 scale. So that was pretty cool. The first one was the one that I had gone into it thinking I was going to run. That was Thagrosh 1 with my normal Thrones list, but teched for Protectorate specifically. So dropping Hex Hunters for a Naga, which is what I tried in a tournament that I talked about and got my ass kicked by Morgul 2. So not a good idea in a paired environment. There was Kallus 1, which is my standard Kallus 1 that is in both triads because he's kind of the anchor. I've been running Meyer and Golab and a Seraph, which is like a little weird, but I like making my list very versatile. And I do sacrifice a little bit of raw power for that, but I found it to be really useful. And I'll talk about that a little bit in the games. And the third list was Animag. I experimented with War Spears because I thought that might be a good Scorn drop with all the huge bases, but ultimately settled on Double Chosen because I felt that was just a better use of her kit. And that's how the numbers played out for me. And then the other triad is where it gets a little weird. Still Kallus 1. I picked up Donnie's Kallus 2, which has the Scythian Golab build with the Rake and Double Chosen Warmongers. And the third list was kind of birthed out of some Blight madness of just looking at the numbers and being like, man, what am I weak to with this double Kallus pairing? And it turned out what I was largely weak to was shooting, like dedicated shooting or like shooting that aren't attacks, and also spell, like control stuff. So the third list ended up being Saren out of that and Double Thrones, because I feel like I like Thrones a lot. I've been playing them quite a bit since they got changed. And I experimented with a bunch of different builds with her and ultimately ended up going with Carnivian Naga. And then where it got kind of weird was I brought a Ravagor because one of the things that I found the list was bad into and had some iffy matchups into was Weapon Master spam and War Machine specifically, because that's just how things kind of played out. So I ended up running a Ravagor for a bit. It was a weird accent. the thing that made me change it was Gareth 2. So I played a Gareth 2 game when I was experimenting with Zuriel, and Zuriel was a huge liability. So I ended up just switching out to play a Ravagor there to keep Gareth honest. And then it ended up working really well into the Crix matches that I played it into and some Kador and stuff. So I ended up keeping it. It was interesting. So that's what I practiced with all of that stuff leading up to the event, and then ended up dedicating to the Kallus 1, Kallus 2 Saren build because I felt like that gave me the best coverage of the field. And my goal was to play Kallus 1 as little as possible and kind of rely more on Dark Horse stuff, and Saren definitely fit that. So going into the weekend, I basically, the day before I didn't play in champs, I just pushed Saren as hard as I could in scrambles and casual games, and basically just lost all of those games by kind of pushing the limits. And I didn't lose all of them, but was basically willing to lose those games because they didn't really matter, to see how far I could push the list into things that I wasn't familiar seeing, like Harbinger and played her into Iona and played her into Saoirse Ronan and stuff like that, just to kind of see how it pans out. And I felt good going into the next day with it. And so I did.
Yeah, so, I remember coming over on Champions Day and just kind of checking in with you every now and then to see how mm-hmm. things were going. And like you were losing most, if not all, your games, but you're like, it performed okay. It performed okay. I could have mm-hmm. played it better. So like you were clearly learning a lot from what you were putting down on the table.
Yeah, it was a list I felt like I was failing more than it was failing me. And when to feat and how to use her, you know, ample but limited fury pool, how to position my spell martyrs. The list was weird because of the points. I ended up running 10 solos, which is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, that's a huge number.
It was funny, though, throughout the weekend because I had 3 shepherds in the list just for lack of better options, really, and ended up running them out in front of my lions. And like the practice games, a shepherd killed like a troll champion. They were killing like, I think one killed like a Tharn. I was like charging them around. They were killing stalkers. They were doing like a stupid amount of work for what they are because people just basically ignore them. And so they're standing in front of your lines and taking boosted damage mat 7s on things and just occasionally spiking and just blowing stuff up. It was pretty hilarious.
That's amazing.
They were great targeting beacons for my sorceress and hellions when I was playing into Wolves of Winter, stuff like that. So they'd like charge in, hit one Doom Reaver maybe, but just get into a spot where I could spray like 4 of them. So that kind of stuff was neat. I used them as targeting beacons to run up the field, and then I would spine burst them and kill a bunch of Doom Reavers and stuff like that. It was fun. They would run out there for Ravagors to shoot them. It was interesting. It was definitely an exercise in like, what can I do with this list to make it work? I did run Valkyries. That was important for the list, and 3 spell martyrs. So going into Masters, the first person I played was someone from your meta, Tyrone.
Yeah, you ended up facing Josh. And yep. I remember looking over, I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. Thought to myself.
Yeah, he was running Kador. So he had Old Witch 2, Vlad 1, and Saoirse 1. And it was on Spread the Net. No, it was on Standoff. So 2 circles, 2 rectangles. And I was like, you know, I'm trying to not play Kallus 1, but I'm going to play Kallus 1. So I did. He picked Saoirse 1, which is understandable. That's kind of what I expected. And he went first, which sucks running into Doom Reavers when they go first. And I ended up, the way that the terrain was set up, I could kind of like cloud wall up the center of the field. And so I kind of got to run my whole army up there. And then, because there was a forest, there was an obstruction, and there was a cloud all kind of staggered centrally. So I just hit everything behind that with my clouds. And then, I realized that game, because I hadn't seen Wolves of Winter very much, that what happens when there's a Grey Lord adjunct in the list is, and then Colden Lords, is they get to cast Guidance too. And I hadn't really thought about that when I was doing my matchup analysis, because of just lack of experience. So Golob got shot by 2 destroyers. It's great.
Oh, jeez.
Ouch.
And got pretty beat up, but lived, because I put in that list, I put Golob really far forward a lot of the time, just to threaten things so that Golob can get in, kill some stuff, and then get out of there. So the nice thing was, the next turn I got to slipstream Golob up slightly. He was touching about 7 Doom Reavers. All of them died, fill Golob up to full.
Oh my god.
And yeah, it was nice. And then brought a bunch of Chosen and Warmongers and Birds and Kallus Feated and like all, you know, the whole 9 yards of the normal Kallus shenanigans. And Saoirse was sitting behind her objective, like right near it though. And so Kallus, I got a Spell Martyr up and did a eruption on the objective and boosted damage on her and did like 9 damage after transfer or after focus or whatever. So yeah. It rolled pretty well. and Golob was like drooling visibly at that point because I could, if I could clear the zones, if I could clear a landing spot, I could just charge Golob up into the objective and kill her. But there was one Doom Reaver that I just could not puzzle out how to get out of there. So what I ended up having to do was trample Golob over Alexia, over the objective, over the eruption, and into Sertia. And it was not the best odds. As long as if my body went out, it didn't matter. But I needed my mind and my spirit to hit the crazy woman. Yeah. So it ended up working out. She blew up. Golob ate her. And that was that round.
Pretty awesome. How much time did you have left on your clock, by the way?
I spent a lot of time doing that. I went into it kind of cautiously and seeing how things would work. Things kept working out. So I was like, okay, you know, hit confirm, kind of checking the boxes. And then at some point I was like, you know, this is starting, like this one Doom Reaver is really wrecking my day. And I was like, I've already burned a lot of clock. I kind of need to go in on this. So then I slowed down and was very meticulous about it from there out because I had one shot and I was doing pretty well in scenario. But there were a lot of Doom Reavers around, so I just focused everything on making sure that that assassination happened. I actually don't see in the picture what the clock was, but it was lower. Paul was my next opponent, the person who you played from my old meta. We were playing into Mirage, and he's like, so you were telling me yesterday you're trying to not play Kalos 1. I was like, I am absolutely trying to not play Kalos 1 today. And I was like, but, you know, it's Kalos 1, so I'm going to end up playing him a lot. And I think I picked Kalos 1 on Mirage. He picked Wanderer, and he's like, yeah, I kind of figured. That game was interesting because I did normal Kalos things. I was really careful about the Clockatrice that he had. And this is one of those situations where the Seraph actually came in handy, is it gave me the ability to slipstream my Spell Martyr on top on bottom of one that allowed it to get the 2 inches to get into... How many Dreadrots did I hit? Or whatever the gun dudes are. Holloman.
Yeah.
I hit several of them and blocked like their movement through part of the table, and so even though they like shot birds and got their stuff back, it was a pretty big take on my end just for a Spell Martyr. So that was great. I ended up hiding behind a kind of central forest to my zone most of the game, and he kept putting in like Krabbits and stuff, and the Hellmouth kept eating them. And basically what ended up happening, he put out his tokens and stuff, and I just was flying stuff around doing normal Kalos things. And what ended up happening was he had to kind of start committing things to stop the tide of control points, and just didn't have a lot of good angles. He lost some of his momentum on coming out of his zone because of the eruption, and got kind of tied up by Incubi and all that stuff. I killed one of his madcap, whatever the thing is that makes madcaps, and just kind of controlled the field fairly well with Kalos. He could only generally get in. I was pretty careful to protect my zone. He could only get in like Krabbits and stuff like that. The dice didn't swing super favorably in either direction, I feel like. And what ended up happening was I got Golob into the Clockatrice in such a way where if the Clockatrice wanted to continue contesting my central flag, had to stay in Golob's melee range. And of course, Golob will just kill it then. So he got put in a situation where that was the only option. And he ended up, he's like, screw it, just I'll pull the clock back. And the Seraph killed, I think, the last Krabbit, maybe, that came into my zone. So that was cool, too. Seraphs with Dark Guidance are pretty kick-ass.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my birds got really torn up in that matchup, but that's kind of to be expected against that list. So that's what was going on there. The Isle of Sight was kind of annoying. and ended up pulling out a scenario win, which threw me right into Michael Stone. So baby Michael, as he's known. And I play him in all of my conventions now. So that's cool. We were playing on the Pit 2, which is when I was talking about that crazy giant matrix I did. The pairing that I went with and the setup that I went with had one critical flaw in the circle, and it was playing on the Pit 2 against someone running Bradagus in their triad, which is what he had. So that was great. And I think I overthought it a little bit and ended up going with Kallus 2, and he chose Iona, which makes sense because it's Iona. And I remember, like, right as I chose the list and showed him, I was like, he's from Donnie's meta.
Yeah.
He has more practice into this list than I do playing it. So that's not good. And it turned out it wasn't good because I played super cautiously for as many turns as I could, to the point where, like, we hadn't even really touched each other's lines when the Blood Weavers came in and killed my objective. And my turn one, top of one, I got a tentacle into position to light his Lord of the Feast on fire and maybe other things. And because of where they were positioned, I also caught his Night Witch and a Gallows Grove on fire top of one, which felt amazing, except that only the Night Witch died. And the fire went out on the Grove, and Lord of the Feast took some damage and then just went to the back of the field and kept getting corpses put on it and kept eating them to heal up, and just stayed on fire the whole game for multiple turns, just sitting in the back of the field like an asshole, on fire, waiting for me to, like, burn clock trying to deal with his bullshit. And basically, I started sending, like, I sent a couple chosen in to kill. I needed to kill the Gallows Grove to stop the Hunter's Mark threat. I needed to clear my zone, clear his zone. And basically what happened was once scenario started happening, like, basically once the Blood Weavers came in, killed my objective, I had to keep putting things into that zone in order to stop it. And I cleared his zone, but I didn't, because Golab rolled like an idiot and could not kill the one Ravager that was sitting in the zone. So I kept lighting things on fire. The fire kept going out. It was like, it felt like I was relying really heavily on luck, like fire rolls, things like that. Lord of the Feast killed like three warmongers and some other stuff. He died for his trouble, but he crippled the Scythian to almost nothing. The Scythian killed him the next turn, but it was like each, like, a Ravager came in and killed, like, I don't know, like a couple chosen, some warmongers. You know, it's like I trade one for one usually, and he was trading like one for three, one for four.
Yeah.
And eventually I was keeping my beast pretty safe, except for the Scythian, but I just couldn't, like, claw myself back into that game. And he, because he learned from Donnie, just sat in the back of the field with Iona sitting in the kill box, basically, like, with the Jester toe out, behind, like, as much terrain and other models as he could. And I just could not get to her realistically without really, really, really stretching myself. And Kallus's control area is just not that big. So I would have had to expose myself to try for a risky play like that. And ultimately, I just, because I had to be really careful, because if you mess up at all, you lose. And so I had to burn more clock during that whole thing than he did. And I ended up not being that far behind on clock. But it's still, I think when it ended, he was like less than 5 minutes. So I just couldn't, I had like 30 seconds left and I was like, fuck it. Like, it doesn't matter. You know, I can't reasonably do enough here. I had a stupid stalker on fire for multiple turns. It would go out and it was on two boxes and I would catch it on fire again. And then they would go out again. So it wasn't great.
Yeah, it sounds like it was a rough game.
Yeah, it was like, I should have dropped Saren I built the Saren list with Iona in mind, and the Saren list is better at those kinds of situations than Kalos 2 is. It's just I wasn't thinking when I was doing list selection. This is someone who knows Kalos 2 really well. I would have had a much better shot dropping something like Saren 1, who I can't imagine he's seen recently, with like a really weird build and just kind of rolling with it. But I overthought it, and that was like probably the biggest mistake I made in Masters. So I lost that round, went into the next round, hit Nick Maynard, who's playing Kador, and I was like, okay, well, you know, I already lost, so I may as well just play Saren into this. It was on Recon 2. Figured this is like a matchup that she was built kind of deal with Kador. Vlad 2 is something that I was a little concerned about, but I felt like her play into Zarkova 2 was good, as long as I could keep the sprays kind of under control. Because they wouldn't be able to directly target Saren, even though they could spray each other. That makes like the angles kind of weird. And Sersha 3, I felt like Saren could pull through on that. So he chose Vlad 2 and Wolves of Winter. The Ravagor was put in there at the expense of the Vlad 2 Armor Core game to play this game better. So I was interested to try it out. Unfortunately, the only line of sight blocking terrain on the table were two big clouds in the center against Vlad 2. So that's great. Oh, I love it.
Geez, yeah.
I love that he can just take terrain off the table. So
this sounds like a good plan. I like it.
Yeah. So they can see the thrones anyway, so whatever. In this game, I made a critical mistake. I made a gamble that didn't work out. Is probably a better way of saying it. I tried to set it up so that if he feeded, he could get about... I didn't think he would feed top of one or bottom of one. I thought that he would want to get more out of it. And I gave him like a low, like it was like a 48% chance with the four Doom Reavers that could get to me. He said he thought that he could get more. When I measured it, I didn't think he could. Four is like a 48% chance with Vlad feet to kill a throne. I didn't feet. And he did it. He just killed it. So I was like, okay, he overkilled it by one box. So I was like, well, that's probably the game. If he didn't get it, he would have thrown a whole unit of Doom Reavers away. And I feel like I needed to position aggressively, but couldn't really risk a feat at that point. In retrospect, I should have only given him three Doom Reavers and not tried to play the odds. But I didn't do that. So whatever. That game, I still played it out. It came down to the fact that I just didn't have, with that throne missing on one side of the table, the Ravagor didn't perform as well as I would have liked in that match. It was okay. The Valkyries got in and got dirty. The Forsaken went in and killed stuff. I had like shepherds running around killing things. I really wrecked one side of the table with a Sorceress and Hellion and a Throne and some Shepherds and a Naga. They just kind of dominated over a couple units of Doom Reavers and Turnian, Cav, and all this other stuff. But ultimately, I just couldn't spread enough with what I had there once the other Throne was gone. So if I had been able to feat with both Thrones and get in, I feel like it would have been a much better game. And I just made a gamble that didn't work out. So
yeah,
it is what it is.
Yeah, that's how it goes sometimes, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So that was your Masters.
That was Masters. Yep. I felt like the big mistakes I made, I actually really like the Saren list in a triad in this environment, because I feel like Protectorate pins us into needing to bring Thagrash 1 or Kalos 2. And normally that restricts our pairings massively because of Kalos 1 being so critical, but having that third list made it really cool, and it let me play something kind of off the wall that actually fit, because I tried it into Assyria. I really liked its Assyria games. There were a lot of control casters that having Banishing Ward was really cool, and Retaliatory Strike is awful. It's an awful feat in that capacity. I only got two attempts to attack with my Carnivian. and it missed both of them because it's Nat 6. So overall, like, you know, she still has a ways to go, but it was cool to have an environment where I was like, yeah, I feel good dropping Saren into this. So that was neat.
Yeah, right on. I agree. I really hate the retaliatory of being only on beasts, and it's like, oh, it feels so bad.
All weekend, everyone asked me, are you going to take a retaliatory strike with your throne?
Oh.
And I was like, I wish. I really do.
Do you want to slipstream your throne, Cutter? That's something you want to do?
Just want to rub that salt in that wound right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they were, and they weren't saying it in a mean way.
No.
They were.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. They actually.
That's why it hurts even more.
Yeah, which made it hurt more.
Yep. I had someone ask if my Scythian or if my Scythian was 13-17.
Yeah.
I was like, no. No, he's not.
In fact.
He could be.
His defensive stats do not sum to 30.
They do not.
They do not.
Oh my god. Alright. Let's get out of that hole before we get much too deep into it. Let's go to Nate. Nate, you're the last one. You're a special guest. And a little bit of spoilers, but he did much better than any of us. So why don't you talk about your Masters run?
Debatably so. Yeah. So I opened the convention by playing in Champions and messing around in Crucible Guard, which I won't talk about. Suffice to say, I had a lot of fun. For Masters, Cutter and I talked for a very long time on the drive up, as he mentioned. I felt pretty confident in bringing Kallus 1 and the Thagrush 1 list in Children, which I'm like super well practiced in. I think I've been playing it for like close to a year and a half at this point, and I just love it. It feels like a super strong generalist, and it presents like an armor skew that's very different. And also has a lot of game into Scorn, both Immortals and non-immortal Scorn. So those two were nailed down. I felt like I needed a Protectorate answer, and I didn't know if Thagrush 2 was going to be enough. And so I was flipping back and forth on my third list between like a Faana 2 Flying Circus and then possibly Kallus 2. And I actually ended up settling on Animag, because I felt that she plugged up a lot of the holes that I had into some of the War Machine factions that I was thinking I would see. you just like completely derailed me. And that she also gave me a nice kind of like pincer to catch Scorn pairings with. So if I have Kallus 1, Thagrush 1, and Animag, if I play Scorn, I just get to pick my army list based on the scenario, and it's wonderful. And that she possibly has game into Iona with the feat and her ability to kind of just crank everything up so high. So that was what I ended up doing. I felt like she wanted the Blightbringer a lot more than Kallus 1, so I actually dropped the Blightbringer from Kallus 1. And ran a Golab double Nerf a la Omnis kind of build with triple Spell Martyrs, Warmongers with Gorag, double Birds and Chosen, and double Hellmouths, and of course, my boy Amok. Thagrush is, you all know the list, right? It's the three characters, two Shepherds, a Spell Martyr, Kralix, Max Hexes with Bale, Max Raptors, and then the Valks. And then my Animag list is a little weird, and part of it is that I just don't own enough other units for Primal Terrors. I had a bunch of War Spears left from Mark II, and then didn't get any new stuff other than a single unit of Chosen. So it's Animag with the Blightbringer and the Harrier and a Mock. And then this is a little bit of Cutter tech that I stole for the weekend, the Bogtrog Mistspeaker and two Spell Martyrs. A Warmonger Warchief, full Warmongers with Gorag, Min Rotwings, Max Rotwings, Max Chosen, and double Hellmouth. My first round was Standoff. I played into John Henry, who y'all might know if you went to the OTC. He's the guy who won the Shark Tank there, playing Crucible Guard. So that was actually a super fun game for both of us, because I got to kind of pick his brain about his lists before the game. But he was running like Sevestro, McKay, and Baldwin. I was pretty worried that he was actually going to drop McKay into me, because I don't know if any of you have gotten to play against McKay yet, but Homegirl like kills everything. Just like if your defense is like 12 or lower, and she can roll enough sixes, like she'll just shoot your whole army off the table in a single turn. So I was thinking he was going to drop that. And I was like, what do I have that has a decent amount of resilience against stuff like that and can also threaten to alpha it? And so I decided on Animag, dropped that. And I'm not going to go into like super depth with all my games, but I think I'll tell y'all about cool moments from all of them.
Yeah, sounds good.
My cool moment from my game into Baldwin Gearheart was when I remembered that Gearheart had Boundless Charge, and I got a transfer in the face when I didn't expect one.
Whoops.
And that's always fun. The transfer smote my two chosen into each other and knocked them down, which actually ended up working out into my favor, because Bond of Gristle and Bone then made it so that his Crucible Guard infantry couldn't shoot them to death, and his Dragon's Breath rocket couldn't shoot them, and a bunch of other stuff like that. So my next turn, he then charged. I felt super bad for him. So the one he charged slammed into the other one, took a four dice POW 14, died promptly. The one who fell down lived with like four boxes. He charged a Vindicator into it, missed his charge attack, hit me with his second attack, rolled a... it was like he rolled like a seven because he's dice down four. So he did 3 points of damage, leaving me alive on one. So I rapid healed back to four, and then he missed his third buy.
On a knockdown model, or am I thinking
on a not missed his third buy, failed to break armor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So he was a little salty about that. And he couldn't give out all that much focus, because Baldwin is constantly, Baldwin's whole army is, fire immune except for Baldwin. So he just lives in constant fear of getting a Blightbringer shot to the face. So the cool moment in this game was that I feated with Animag and cast Carnage. And then, one of my Harrier flew over my Blightbringer to kill the Trancer. So I boosted to hit on the Trancer, hit the Trancer, killed the Trancer, and when Trancers die, they explode. Everything in the little 4-inch AoE around them takes a POW 12 blast damage roll, and then they push the models in the AoE outwards, like 2 inches. So I got to charge him with the Harrier, kill the Trancer, and then the Trancer's explosion pushes the Harrier out of the drag lane so that my left Hellmouth can pull the Vindicator out from in front of my Blightbringer and let my Chosen charge his zone.
That's pretty next level. I love it.
It was pretty groovy, and it was feet turn, so that Hellmouth basically like beat the snot out of the Vindicator. It like diced down one, needing threes to hit.
Yeah, it'll do that.
Yeah, it ended up being a nail biter of a game. The one thing I will share with the folks who are listening, if you have not played against Baldwin, do yourself a favor and play against Baldwin. His feat is kind of wild. He feats and he gives prey to his army. So he chooses like a model or unit of yours. And if I was a little bit savvier of a player, what I probably would have done was like employed the anchor baby technique where you run your units, but like one member of the unit like stays all the way back at max command so that he doesn't get any value out of his feat. But I didn't do that because I hadn't thought of it until after the game. So his swing back turn was like real nasty. This game was like a super grind. I cleared out the left zone and his zone. He cleared out the right zone and eventually crashed into my zone. And he, at the top of seven, killed my Hellmouth in my home zone, killed my objective, and scored. He upped the scenario score. He double scored. So he got, he ended that turn with like 1 second left on his clock and he was up 6-5 on scenario. And so I have no way to contest his zone, the right circular zone. My Blightbringer is in his home zone. So Animag goes, she needs to kill. There's like one contesting model in the circular zone, and then Prospero and like two Dragon's Breath Rocketeers are in his square zone or rectangular zone. So she casts Carnage, puts Fury Strength on the Warmonger War Chief, walks backwards to score the circular zone. The Hellmouth Tentacle hits and kills the last Crucible Guard infantryman. The Blightbringer walks over, kills the two last Dragon's Breath Rocketeers. And then the Warmonger War Chief, bless his heart and soul, charges Prospero and rolls the boosted 13 to one-shot him.
Oh.
Boom!
Got so him. We end the game bottom of 7-7 on scenario, and I win on army points destroyed by like 20 points. It was easily one of my favorite games of the entire weekend.
That's a hell of a game.
Yeah, it was an awesome game to start the Masters with, for sure. My reward for winning that game was to get to play Scorn. Hooray, which I actually don't mind all that much. My opponent, Loic.
So that seems like a dubious reward, but all right.
Yeah. My opponent, Loic, was really, really sweet guy, playing Rasheth in Winds of Death, Zal 2 in Exalted, and Makeda 3 in Imperial Warhost. The scenario was Mirage, so I think y'all can guess what went down.
Sounds like Kallus 1 showed up.
Yeah, I played Kallus 1. I got to win the roll, pick my side, get the most defensible home zone, deploy my Hellmouths super well. I had one that was in my home zone and able to contest his close flag, one that was contesting my close flag and was able to drop tentacles into his home zone. It was great. I started the turn off with a double eruptioning two Hellmouth tentacles that were like between a forest and a building. So I completely walled off the left side, and then just like pushed up the board super aggressively, basically ringed the top of my circular zone with my chosen. My moment to share of this game was that I ran and put a mock behind two base-to-base Nerfs about 7.5 inches from the edges of my clouds. So Loic tries to flood my zone with immortals, so he goes incorporeal with them and he runs the first immortal through the eruption. He gets halfway through the eruption and I flip the clock to me and I roll the damage roll and I'm like, okay, he dies. And he's like, but he's incorporeal. And I measure off amok, and amok is such that he'll hit the exorcist bubble about halfway through both the clouds, so he'll never get to get into my zone without his immortals just like exploding and dying to the pal 14s.
Now that's some sneaky tech right there. I like that.
It's rude behavior. I really loved it.
Did he try to tough any of them, like run up a novitiate and see if they could like tough their way through it?
So he started running the unit before he moved the novitiate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he shuffles everything up that side, moves the mammoth up a bunch, shuffles everything up on the right, and he fails to contest my zone, and he fails to contest my close flag. So he shifts the clock to me, and I look, and I like measure the center flag, and I'm like, okay, the only things contesting here are like three immortals and Abaddon. Can we confirm this? So we pick up the building, we do the whole thing with a 4-inch stick, and we confirm it. So he has the novitiates up there. So I'm like, okay, deploy Golab. So Golab charges two of the immortals, kills them, sprints forward over his army, takes like two free strikes to stand behind the two remaining contesting models, the immortal and Abaddon. And I get to charge two warmongers in. My one warmonger hits Abaddon and misses killing him by one. Womp womp. Thankfully, I had a chosen on the other side of the building who was able to walk forward and bop him. And I rolled, I think it was like, he's like armor 17 or armor 18 or something like that. So I needed like a hard 5 or 6 to do it. And I got it. And then basically I moved forward and feated. I got to score 3 points and feat defensively. And he did a decent job of contesting. So he contested my right flag with like four immortals. And then he ran two immortals all the way around this forest and into my home zone and contested the center flag and like killed Golab and a whole bunch of other stuff. My next turn, he also killed my Hellmouth with the Mammoth. But I had like three birds base to base with it. So when he shot it with the huge AoE, he killed the Hellmouth and he killed like three birds. So I got to make four incubi in my home zone. So my next turn, they just punched out all the immortals that made it in. And his feet was far enough, or his army was spread so far that his feet could only cover like one side or the other. So he elected to cover the side with my flags. And my Nerif kills a clearing model. And then I ignite my warmongers. And my warmongers are the best. And they charge in and they roll all the hard sevens to berserk through his contesting immortals. All of them fail their tough checks.
Oh.
They die. I score wow. two more and end a turn. And that's the end of that game. Like, nice and quick. Next up, I get to play the Legion Mirror into Danny Daigle. He's a super nice dude. I saw him a bunch at the tech. He was one of the people talking a lot about Animag Primal Terrors back when like Primal Terrors was super fresh, last probably about a year ago. But he had always played Minions. So we get to play on the Pit 2, and we get to play Kallus 2 into Animag. And the reason I went with Animag here is one reason and one reason alone, and it's Hexblast, because it's super clutch in this matchup. Uh-huh. Because Kallus 2 leverages Blazing Path so that you don't get to get any work out of your gun, and your Blightbringer is just like a big, fat, sad sack of a liability that he's going to get charged on feet by like Golab or the Scythian and just get riggedy-wrecked, or the Warmongers. Or really anything in that army, right? Because Battlelust is a thing. So I capitalized on that by using a Spell Martyr and basically one turn a Warmonger kills a tentacle that he put into contest, and I trigger the Ritual Slaughter and I zap Kallus 2 with a Hex Blast, knock off Blazing Path. Then my Blightbringer is able to shoot, kill three clearing models in front of his Hellmouth on his left side, my right. My Chosen get to charge in, kill that Hellmouth, and then repo back into the Blightbringer bubble. So they're still armor 21. That turn, a whole bunch of BS happened. My Hellmouth tentacle rolled the hard 9, hit a rake, pulled it into the maw, and then the maw rode little boxcars on the attack roll, and I like killed it.
Jesus, dude.
Yeah, like, not a thing that should have happened at all. That maw on the one side of the table was amazing. It was like pulling in Chosen, knocking them down. It was great. I made like one, that turn he commits Golab to kill the two Chosen, and he misses a couple attack rolls. And he kills the Chosen he charges, but then he needs to attack the other Chosen, and he's taken his beak attack and his first of his claws, so he needs a second claw attack, and he boosts the damage to try and break armor, so he's diced down 8, and he doesn't get it. So then he just gets 3 buys with the beak, and he doesn't kill the Chosen. So next turn I get Golab. We continue to grind down. That turn he commits like one other thing to kill that Chosen, and in doing so he gets to clear this center zone and score it with his caster, which is, that's actually the moment when I lose that game, right? Because he goes up the 1 CP. I like counterfeited a turn later, killed his objective, killed like almost his entire unit of Chosen on the right side of the board, killed Golab, like did a lot of killing. But he had a Hellmouth behind a house that I just like could not dig out. And I took too much time and eventually clocked out on bottom of 6. And he was up like 1 scenario point at that point. So it was a really, really good game. I definitely could have played a little wiser with my time. And I think had I gotten the Blightbringer involved earlier, the game would have shaked out a little, or shaken out a little more in my favor. But all is said and done. Round 3, I get to play against Corey. This is Corey James Weirstra. He's another Scorn player running Hexy 2, Xerxes 1, and Zadesh 2. Zadesh 2 is with like double turtles and all the titans. Xerxes 1 is in the Exalted. Side note, this is like a supremely underrated Exalted list that I don't see a lot of people running, but it's really, really good. And Hexy 2 was an Imperial War Host. I saw Hexy 2 and I kind of figured like this is an assassination list. Zadesh is probably like a list for slow scenarios, and Xerxes appears to be a list for fast scenarios. So we're playing Recon 2. So I dropped Kallus 1 again.
This has to be round 4, right?
Not round 3? This is round 4. You're right. Because it was John Henry, Loic, Danny, yeah, and now Corey. So this is round 4. Cool moment in that game. I deployed my one Hellmouth behind a forest on the right side, locked up super tight, and I deployed my left Hellmouth super far forward behind a wall, and basically he has a mammoth in his list, and so I'm like, I bet if I do this, he moves his mammoth up and starts shooting this Hellmouth, so he doesn't run his mammoth into the zone, number one, which is great for me. Number two, if he has to walk his mammoth up, he's going to need to bunch up his immortals in front of it. So his mammoth, sure enough, walks forward and on bottom one, kills one of my hellmouths. But because of that, he has to bunch up like a whole unit of immortals in front of the mammoth. And one eruption, I get to pick up 6 immortals on the like the bottom of turn 2.
That's value right there.
Yeah, which I felt like was a good trade. Because that thins out his middle unit, which is like the unit he wants to put Defender's Ward on, which he does. And then he runs them in. He also revives a bunch of them using the Supreme Guardian and actually drops one super far forward in the unit within 5 inches of Amok and still in formation. So like my turn starts and I'm like, sweet, Amok's going to walk to the flag here. And we're going to disbinding Defender's Ward off that unit. So that was great. And he doesn't feat. So I get to basically using Galab and the Warmonger to like blender most of the immortals on the right side of the board. I feat. And then when I'm done doing all the work with the worker models, I run 20 birds in between his army and everything in mine that does anything. And then I shift clock back, scoring one on my my flag on the right. And he goes super hard into like kill everything mode. He is killing birds like left and right. He's popping incubi out of everything. He's like killed 3 of my chosen and he's just like going, going, going. But his like poor dice aren't cooperating because he's like rolling to hit these birds with these immortals that are like mat 7. And he's rolling like 11. 10, 12 to hit these birds. And then the incubi pop out and he's rolling like 4, 6, 7 to hit the incubi. So like, I was joking with him the whole time. I was like, dude, if your dice, like if you could just say you're going to attack a guy and then don't do it, like you'd start winning this game because he'd like flip his dice rolls around. But he goes just like in hard. And I think he probably killed something like 16 models on my side that turn. So he finishes the turn and like shifts the clock back to me and looks down and he only has like 5 minutes left.
No.
And he's like, oh no, what happened? And I was like, I don't know, man, you killed most of my army. That's what happened. So Golab and the remaining warmongers get to clear out my right zone. So I score offensively on my bottom of 2, defensively on his top of 3. And then again on my bottom of 2, and I clear the zone on my right. And then I just shift the clock back to him, and it's 4-0 on scenario. And he goes in for like an assassination, but has to do all the vengeance and all the upkeeps and all that other stuff. And he burns like half his time doing that. And then needs to clear a path for Hakkar to charge. Basically, he would have needed to have moved up the mammoth, shot my Nerf dead. Which is like very dicey to begin with. Then Hakkar, or no, shot the objective dead. Then he gets to charge feet and charge Hakkar through where the objective used to be and get Hakkar onto Kallus, who's like camping 2. And he clocks before he can get it done. We roll it out and he super would have gotten it. Turns out Hakkar on Xerxes' feet turn is a scary, scary man.
Yeah.
Man. Yep. So he clocks and I win that one. And that puts me at 3-1 for the day. And I think because of the Mirage game, the I scored like 7 CPs in game 1, I scored 5 in game 2, like 4 in game 3, and 5 in game 5 or game 4. So I tie on strength of schedule for 8th place, and then it goes to tie breaks, and I beat the guy below me. He had 9 CPs and I had like 22.
That is correct. I actually pulled up the standings just to see.
Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, the top 8 from that was Tom Guan, Matt McWaters, Danny McGeehan, Danny Diggle, Josh Bates, Marc-Andre LeBlanc, Jake Wilstrup, and Nate Magnin.
Yeah.
So we ended up with 2 Legion in the top 8, which I was pretty excited to see, personally.
Yeah. I was joking with Danny during our game. Like, after he beat me, I turned to him and I was just like, you have to win this now. Like, you have to make it in. One of us has to make it.
Yeah.
And he made it. And actually, big shout out to John Henry. He's one of the reasons that I qualified, because I beat him round 1 and then he went 3-0 the rest of the day in Masters.
What a legend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super nice dude. He ended up having dinner with us that night too, which was a lot of fun.
That's what you need to do, is beat someone round 1, but make them not want to quit the tournament.
Oh, yeah. We had such a good game. Like, that's still, I look back on that and that's like one of my favorite games of the weekend. So I begin Sunday round 1. I get to play the one, the only Matt.
That sounds right.
Mr. McWaters. Yep. He is running Osram, Magnus 2, and Damiano. I'm looking at this and I probably shouldn't have even thought for half a second that he was going to drop Damiano, but I did. And I kind of know, like, Mercs players love dropping Osram into Legion.
Yeah.
So this game was on the stream, and suffice it to say, I made some good plays, and I made some really small mistakes in this game. But when you're, I think, at a table in Masters Final, like, really small mistakes can kind of do you in. I needed a little bit of luck, and I needed to execute things perfectly. And I didn't quite have all the luck that I needed, and I also made enough mistakes that it was kind of my undoing. So we were playing, is it Invasion, right?
It was Invasion.
Yeah, sideways division sign, right? Invasion? Mm-hmm. Okay. And yeah, so he drops Osram, and wins the roll to go first. I just get bullied massively by the, like, super long feet threat ranges of his drillers and bashers. And so I play pretty far back. I deployed my Hellmouths really far out to the side because I know I'm not going to get any drag angles. So I'm like, let me try to pull his army apart and soften his brick in the middle so I can maybe blow through it. Highlight of the game for me was probably, so I have my Hellmouth all the way in, like, the bottom right corner or bottom right quadrant of the rightmost circle zone. So he walks Eris up and does the deadly shot, and then bottom of 1, I get to run a spell martyr forward and just hex blast Eris off the table. So that was delightful.
Speaker tech.
Yup. Yeah. Thank you, Cutter, for that one. That just felt super good to be.
It
able
does
to
feel play. Really good. Yeah.
Yeah, to be able to play and not have my armor buffs shot off or, like, anything else. So didn't commit super hard. Was kind of trying to bait him and get him to come in and commit to me so that he would have to clear the zones, because I know he doesn't start scoring until turn 3. Probably could have done that a little better. Definitely could have played my warmongers better. I played them super wide and they just got shot to pieces. I was trying to keep them away from, like, the guns and the flak field and all of that. I played my birds super far back because of the flak fields. Turn 3, I think I run up my other spell martyr and I go for a hex blast on his Horgenhold artillery corps. And I nail the guy because I'm magic 8 because of the stupid vet leader off the warmonger, which is great secret tech if you haven't tried it. Mm-hmm. And I break armor on the big guy, and then I boost blast on both the little guys in that unit, and I need, like, boosted 9s to kill them because they're armor 15. So I get one of them and I miss the other. I think I roll like a boosted 7. I think I rolled a boosted 8. So I missed it by 1. And if I had gotten that, I would have been able to pick up all the artillery, in a single go. And I think Bubba even commented on the stream. He's like, man, if Nate had hit that, like, that would have been the two best spell martyr activations I've probably seen all weekend, like 13 points for two spell martyrs. I also forgot to turn a tentacle around and shoot it in the back with a eliminator that was contesting my right zone. Had I remembered to do that, then the boosted 5 I would have rolled would have in fact hit, and then I would have needed a boosted 9 to kill her and start scoring first. So just little mistake. Eventually I did get the opportunity to like push the Blightbringer and the Chosen up the middle. I had one Chosen, the last or second to last one alive, go God mode and charge Matt's objective, impact attack it, and roll boxcars on damage for 8 points of damage.
Dear Lord.
And then flub his charge attack damage roll and roll 6-1-1. But thank God I cast Fury Strength on them because we made it, and it was literally the exact roll I needed to kill the objective, which kept me in the game for like one more turn. Animag got to go ham that game too, cast Fury Strength on herself, and using the Blightbringer aura, go in on a basher at POW 17 and just like dirt nap it. it only took her charge and 3 bot attacks to do it too. She's a monster. So if any of you are playing Animag and you haven't done that, please do that sometime, but don't do what I did, because I did that and then a basher just walked up and punched her in the face and killed her. There was a moment too when that God mode Chosen killed his objective. In retrospect, I could have ritual slaughtered Bonda Gristle and Bone onto Animag, and then she would have lived. So like I said, small mistakes, but it was a great time. Matt was a great opponent, and definitely a good sport, despite the fact that I was dealing with some mistakes and some rotten dice and stuff like that. But that was the end of it for me. Then I dropped, and Cutter and I drove home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had a long drive ahead of you, so I totally understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's awesome. It's really cool that you guys were able, like, just being on stream, like, that's really sweet. And being in the quarterfinals, like, that's even sweeter.
Yeah. It's every opportunity, I think, that you get to play in a Masters like that, especially an Open Masters, is a great opportunity, because you get to play against really high caliber players for a lot of rounds. And those games can really teach you a lot. Even just this one game against Matt, the fact that I could then the next day go back and watch it was enormous for me. Being able to pick up on just little tiny plays, like things like on Animag's feet turn, just run one bird into melee with the thing that you're going to go punch with the Blightbringer, or like just little stuff. There's so much that you can learn from any of your games. And I was really grateful for the opportunity to be on the stream and be able to review everything like that.
Yeah, sounds sweet, man. That's really cool.
How much do you think we'd have to bribe Tim and Matt to get Cutter on stream next year?
Commentate or to be like playing?
No, you're gonna play, and me and Ronlo are gonna commentate for you. It's gonna be great.
No, I want to commentate with Wolf. I feel like the two of us, absolute mayhem and nonstop shit talking. It'd be great.
God. All right, he's gonna run forward. I think that's a good move. What do you think? I don't know. Fuck this game. Seriously, dude? It's like turn one. Yeah, he already lost. He fucked up. He literally ran a solo for it. He fucked up. I don't know what else you want me to say.
That sounds boring.
I was really glad that I didn't do too many of my usual things when I'm playing, and I'm like, this dingus runs over here. This idiot runs over there.
I activate this bunch of morons.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, actually, no, it's true.
Did you just say idiot?
Yes, I did.
You watch way too much Supernatural. I love it.
No. You can thank none other than Attilio Ceretti for that one.
Does everybody just know at least one of the Ceretti's? Is that
I think everyone knows the Ceretti's at this point, let's be honest.
It's Wolf, it's kind of hard to just know one of them. They travel in packs.
They're like War Machine royalty at this point. It is like the War Machine version of the Clintons, but with less scandal.
Yeah. Waters refers to them as the first family of War Machine.
It's amazing.
I like that. Yeah. They're also great. They're also like genuinely the best people.
That's true. I haven't seen Trish in like 2 years, and she walked over and like remembered my name and hugged me, and it was like, oh, all right, cool. I'm in.
Yeah, they're great. Pete's like super nice guy. He's started organizing a similar thing out here to the scrums that we do in South Jersey. He organized one in the Philly suburbs, and they just wrapped up their first one. So some really cool stuff.
Nice. Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I feel bad. I almost killed his son. I hope they forgive me.
Literally, or like,
yes.
Is this a drinking thing?
Yes.
You have a bad habit of doing this.
I should not be allowed around. Oh my god, I should not be allowed around anybody who hasn't like been initiated into the drinking game, mm-hmm. especially the full bottles of liquor. It doesn't end
the
well.
Drinking game that is your life?
Yeah, pretty much. My life is a shitpost and I am the meme. Look, I know what I'm about.
Yeah, there is a lot of drinking and a lot of Americans going to dispensaries.
Yep.
Yeah.
Weed is legal, my friends. I'm going to the zoo next year.
I definitely was nursing a little baby hangover when I started my game with McWaters. Yeah.
All right. So that pretty much covers the Sioux. Unless there's anything you guys want to touch on really quickly, I think it's about time to wrap this episode up. We'll start with we'll loop back around to Ryan. You got anything you want to talk about?
Just one event coming up. Well, technically, I suppose two. If you're near the Rochester area, there's a World Underminer this Saturday. So come hang out if you want to play in the World Under event, which is in TGX in June. It's an invitational. You can get points for that. And then if you're in the southern part of the state, near Poughkeepsie, May 25th, we're doing Star Wars Round 4 down there at Champion Cards and Games in Poughkeepsie. So if you're, you know, anywhere in that area and you feel like hanging out, I think I'm going to try and make the drive. It's like 6 hours for me, so I'm not 100% on that yet. But regardless, if you're in the area, you should come and hang out and play some games with people. It's good fun.
Sweet.
Yeah. On the tip of big conventions, I would be remiss to not take the opportunity to mention two. Number one, Nova Open. Please, please, please do yourself a favor. Attend the Nova Open. The War Machine at Nova Open is run by the ever wonderful John LeClaire. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite dudes in this part of the country. That's happening late August. I don't know if they have an exact
weekend.
Yeah, I don't know if they have an exact date up. They do. It looks like August 29th to September 1st. And the other event that I'd like to just mention to everyone is the Boker Brawl. Which is a WTC style team event run in New Jersey. And it is just
October 4th.
Yeah, there we go. October 4th to 6th, 2019. It is just delightful. It is run by the NJ SOBs, Seth, who we mentioned earlier, and Steve Rabideau, two great, great, great guys. And it's going to have some Blood Bowl and Monsterpocalypse this year.
Hmm. Yeah, that well. Game's if taken you... off. I'm not sure if it's going to take off and stick around or if it's going to be on the same trajectory as Guild Ball, but people seem to enjoy that game.
Monpoc or Blood Bowl?
Monpoc, sorry.
Yeah, I know a bunch of my locals really love it. They're like getting into it real hard. I am probably going to pick up a starter set at some point and see if I can talk my girlfriend into smashing buildings with me, because it seems like that would be a fun activity.
Yeah, seems totally reasonable. Yeah.
Smashing mm-hmm. buildings.
Is that what they call it nowadays?
God, what is it with you? You always have to.
I'm basically a 5-year-old. How have you not noticed this yet?
Yeah, I have noticed this.
All right, Cutter, what do you got going on?
I don't have any events. I'm kind of like relaxing a little bit, prepped for the Sioux pretty hard. Feeling pretty shackled in my Legion pairing, so kind of relaxing there. Trying to just play other stuff. It doesn't look like anything's going to change immediately based on the announcement today. So I don't have any cons coming up immediately, though. So I'm not going to lock and load. I don't really see that being in the cards. And I had considered going to TGX, but that's in July. So that's a ways out. I've never been to that, but heard good things from Jake about it.
Yeah, it's good fun. And Scott's decent people.
Mm-hmm. And Nova Open. I really would like to make it to that, and I plan to make it to the Boker Brawl. And I think that is most of the cons coming up. There's the Rochester qualifier. There's like some local stuff. But yeah, I think that's pretty much it for big cons.
Okay, fair enough. Let's see what I got going on. A new shop is opening near me, so I think that should be pretty good. War Machine, I think, is going to be their focus, which is nice compared to what the other shops are focused on. They're mostly like a GW and card shop is the other one, so we'll see how that goes. I'm really looking forward to it. Wants to do like regular events, so I might actually get practice in.
Cool.
But yeah, TGX seems good. I think I have checked the dates, but it might overlap with some stuff I've got going on right now, but we'll see. And Nova Open is right around my birthday, so I might make the effort to get to the States. We'll see.
Should do it.
Do you even have a passport yet?
Not yet.
All right.
It's a goal of mine to actually get my ass in gear and do that.
Yeah, you have time, but I wouldn't screw around too much. I don't know what it's like in Canada.
It's pretty quick. You just have to do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nova's cool. It's set up not quite like the Sioux, but you can stay into a hotel that's like next door. So it is another cool kind of situation where everyone gets to be very close to the convention.
Sweet. All right. Well, I think that'll about do it. So as always, you can join us on the War Machine Discord. A link to that will be in the show notes. And that's it. So thank you all for listening to episode 41 of Blightbringers. We'll talk to you again soon.
It was great seeing everyone at the Sioux. Cheers.
Aloha.
Bye, nerds.
Nerd!
Harsh, man.
I know what I'm about. It's being a nerd.
All right. Goodbye, everyone.